The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning. We do appreciate it. President to make his address tonight concerning the wall and, I guess, budget negotiations, whatever is going on with budget negotiations. But it's really not much to negotiate.
No, there's not going to be any room at all. They're not willing to budge. So it's likely that he's going to announce some kind of executive order or some kind of move, administrative order, on the wall. We'll see what that is. Things he won't be announcing is A, there's a giant meteor headed for Earth. B, we're being invaded by Canada, although everyone knows we are. And C, that Morgan Freeman will be the next president. None of those will be announced.
Well, as one guy saying he believes the president will resign tonight, no, that's not happening.
That is also not going to happen.
Yeah. No. So, no. A lot of people waiting to talk about it, and it is a presidential address tonight, so we'll get to as many calls as possible. Let us go to Christy in Las Vegas. Christy, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hi. Thank you, gentlemen. I was with you being so informative. Would President Trump be able to do an executive order on the citizen birth and the loopholes that allow illegal aliens to get all the free benefits?
No, because that's authorized by Congress.
Seriously?
Yeah.
How?
Yeah.
He could try it, the lawsuit, because I don't know specifically. Let me be very, very careful here, because we've even been very, very careful when talking about the whole national security issue, because there's a lot of unknowns here. A lot of these things have never been tested before.
Right.
But Congress, who is the body that authorizes payments to be made for the government to operate, and it's Congress that allows, if there's benefits to be handed out, it's within the law that they can be handed out in a certain way. Now, departments that hand that money out, there are policies and rules that they can change all the time that might apply to that. But in general, the ability for anything to be paid out by the government comes from Congress.
Right.
So there might be some rule in there that they could change. I don't know. But the fact is, just like if the president, we believe, says, I'm going to do an executive order calling it a national emergency. I'm going to authorize the money to build the wall. I will be the one that will dictate through the executive branch, eminent domain, and everything else you might need to do it. At that point, there would be a lawsuit. And as I said, you can go back to the 1953 decision of Truman wanting to take over the steel companies to provide steel for the Korean War, and he was shot down on that, saying, you don't have any statutory approval to do something like that.
Right, right.
You're calling it a national emergency. Sorry.
Here's the thing. You're in order to build that case in the courts, first of all, there's a number of tasks you're going to have to, you know, hurdles he's going to have to essentially jump over here. Making the case for a national emergency, right? Then he's going to have to make the case that even during a national emergency, as you pointed out with Truman, that he would have the power to do something. Because you look at the process of building a wall. We're not talking about deploying troops. That he can do, actually. But there's a couple of key differences. That is a temporary thing. It is not meant to be permanent. They would not be deployed and occupy whatever territory it might be along the border permanently, although they could be there for a long time if it warranted that. that would be within the president's power. When you talk about the, essentially, the, through eminent domain, that confiscation, it's not really confiscation because they would, there would be compensation to those private landowners, but taking that property and federalizing that property forever, essentially, that the wall would be on, is very different. And where is it that the executive branch goes out of their bounds, out of their roles? We can all look at it and spending many years down there myself and having friends in the Border Patrol, I know what kind of crisis is going on. I understand full well what the cartels are doing. I know that we have terrorists coming across the borders and people that we certainly don't want to be here, that are violent criminals, frankly. And that's outside the population that wants to come here and work. But those are the ones that should most concern us, the ones who are violent, that really are a threat to the community. Case is made. But the others, even though they're not, you know, criminals in nature outside of being here illegally, they are a burden on the system. And we can have that debate. But the fact of the matter is that it will start with the reasoning, whatever the president says on Tuesday night from the Oval Office is going to be his reasoning. And does it meet the justification requirements? And would it with any federal judge? I mean, even outside the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, wherever this might, you know, go. And it's likely it would start there. California being a border state, I'm guessing the first challenge would come from California. And then it would go on from there. Because the federal judge is going to look at this and say, okay, if you believe that this is an emergency, what is it that has changed since you become president? Because you've been president now for almost 2 years exactly. So why are you just doing this now? And then beyond that, it is, again, what the role is, and is the president stepping outside his role? The executive branch, what role do they have here in authority? Do they have? Even during a war with when we were in Korea, you could still have, you know, that question. Can you go in and can the president himself decide to do that without congressional approval?
Right. And that's what the Supreme Court found back then, that even though it was a, you know, a war and a national emergency that we were involved in, mm-hmm. that the president still needed the statutory approval of Congress. That's the wall That's the legal wall that he has to that he has to climb at that point.
Yeah.
We go to Jack in San Diego. Jack, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Right. So what's interesting is, and what the media is not talking about, is that currently there's 31 active national emergencies. One of them would apply, and that is the emergency that President Bush declared 3 days after 9/11. There is a national emergency in effect today with respect to the war on terror. And if we're interdicting and capturing terrorists at the border, the president already has the authority under that national emergency to do what he needs to do to stop the terrorists, including building a wall.
Okay, you're talking about the, and who knows, he might try to use that. You're talking about the war authorization. President Bush, excuse me, he did not create that. Congress created that again, and it gives the president is authorized to use.
The president, if you go to the 1978 National Emergencies Act, the president has to declare the national emergency. It was Bush.
The authorization was done on September 14th. That is the authorization for use of the United States Armed Forces. I'll read it to you directly. I just pulled it up. He didn't create that. Congress created that. The president is authorized to use all necessary and appropriate force against those nations, organizations, or persons he determines planned, authorized, committed, or aided the terrorist acts that occurred on September 11, 2001, or harbored such organizations or persons in order to prevent any future acts of international terrorism against the United States by such nations, organizations, or persons. he might try to use that. I would assume at that point Congress would sue and it would go back to the courts and be in the courts probably until after his first term at least is over. So, but the president didn't create that. So no, the presidents don't create those authorizations. Well, I remember that very well because people would say it's not a declared war, and the war authorization is there from Congress, and that was it right there. Mm-hmm. They're going to say, look, unless you can prove that it's Al Qaeda crossing the border,
right? Well, and on top of that, what has changed in the last 2 years? What would be demonstrate from the Department of Homeland Security that there has been a unique surge recently, in recent months even? Because if Department of Homeland Security shows that has been the case for a number of years, the court will say, well, why is it that you picked this time?
Well, right.
To enact this emergency.
Here's what happened with that war authorization. Here's what the presidents have done because of it. Mm-hmm. Congress has never said and never appropriated money for the wall for the purpose of addressing the war authorization of 2001, 2002. And therefore, that would be Congress's domain. To authorize money specifically for that, because it's been, going on, 18 and a half years since 9/11, and this was to address 9/11. And if Congress has not authorized money for the type of wall that the president wants, then apparently Congress has not viewed that as part of the protection from that, and that would be Congress's authorization.
Yeah, and there are still limits. I mean, even though Bush could send troops into the Middle East in order to keep those efforts going, he would still need the funding from Congress. And did need the funding from Congress. So even though he has certain authorizations, there are other authorizations required in order to make this entire thing play out.
And remember, this is one of the president probably would have, if he thought there was an immediate threat, would have retaliated anyway without even congressional approval. Congress did that and gave him a broad scope because we didn't know what the threat was 3 days later.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They didn't know it was, they weren't sure exactly what had happened 3 days, but in those 3 days, they didn't know.
Right.
Everybody was still guessing at that point what exactly happened here, and then they slowly started figuring out. Now, did they suspect it was Al Qaeda? And immediately afterwards, were there suspicions? Yes. But the fact is, it was broad in general because they didn't know what the threat was. But the point is that over a period, the president's role when it comes to national security and defense is the immediacy of being able to react to a clear and present danger that you don't have time to go to Congress for.
Which is my point on if I were a judge, my first question would be, well, if you believe that's a national emergency now, what has happened that has ramped up this kind of activity at the border in order for you to declare that emergency? What is unique to the situation? Because if it's been going on since you were president and you were aware of that and you're just now acting, then you didn't feel for 2 years it was an emergency.
Or even further, you go to Congress hasn't suggested to build the wall since 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
Because that war authorization was concerning the attacks on 9/11 and what might come out of that. If Congress, over that long period, and that's the point, the president's role is commander in chief. Number one, once Congress authorizes the money, the president runs the war.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also the immediacy of the fact that if we're attacked, the president can immediately, you don't have time to go to Congress.
Right.
You don't have time to do it.
Right.
But if you're talking about a project like a wall on the southern border, and you believe you're going to use the 2001 war authorization because of 9/11, well, then a judge is going to look and say, well, has Congress at any time in that 18 and a half years stated that we need and we are authorizing money for that? Well, no. Well, then Congress is the one who authorizes the money for that. And I think that's where they would go back to the 1953 Supreme Court ruling and state, no, they just because the president states it's an emergency and uses a past authorization, his role is the immediacy of a clear and present danger that Congress hasn't seen or authorized money for in 18 and a half years.
And the question, the next question would be, if you believe it's a clear and present danger, why don't you have troops deployed right now until further notice on the border, along the southern border, and have had that consistently? You're going to have to show that you believe that this is, again, that clear and present danger. And that's what that comes down to. That's the question, the biggest questions in the whole justification of declaring an emergency.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Cold weather can affect your batteries more than any other component on the vehicle. Pay attention to these maintenance tips that may help assure your batteries are equipped to roll through the rest of winter. A fully charged battery is one of the best defenses against cold weather. Have your batteries tested before your next trip to ensure they're able to handle cold early morning starts, and in order to maximize their lifespan. Another tip is to make sure your batteries are clean. Dirty batteries can discharge at a faster rate when the truck is idle. Dirt can also promote corrosion on terminals and connections, a problem that will only worsen in cold weather. Stop in to a TA truck service near you to have your batteries charged and inspected for harmful debris today.
This maintenance tip is a service of TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up. Call 800-924-SHOP.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Red Eye Radio, he is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Let us go to Marlon in Springfield, Missouri. Marlon, hi, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for taking the call.
You bet.
I just want to state that I think that President Trump needs to call the Democratic leaders in and say, it's been a good fight. You guys have won. I'm going to remove the wall funding. However, but as a bonus, we're going to give you a green energy project as part of this funding. And not to mention that the green energy project is going to be solar panels along the border from the Pacific to the Gulf Coast and be on top of a 20-foot.
The president already threw the trial balloon on that.
Thanks, Marlon.
Back when, and we said at that point that was a ridiculous notion to have solar panels on a wall, and that was quickly dropped. The president had actually thought of, brought that up before, but no, you'd have to again, all that would have to go through Congress.
Yeah, you can't say I'm going to build something, but you don't know what it's for. I'm not going to tell you what it's for. It's secret. I just need the funding for it.
Well, you can only do that for a health care plan.
That's right. We have to pass it so we can see what's in it.
Can't do that.
Can't believe she's Speaker of the House again. We have to pass it so people can see what's in it.
Well, look, she gets away with it because nobody asked her the question. She said the wall's immoral. Nobody has asked her why.
No.
Why is the wall? Nobody has answered that question. Nobody in the media even will address it. The wall's immoral because?
Yeah.
The silence is because nobody can answer that question. Yet that's a key. That's what the leader of the Democrats has stated. The wall is immoral.
Yep.
Nobody has asked the question, why?
If Trump had said the wall is immoral, they would be fact-checking and defining the word immoral. The definition from the actual dictionary website would be embedded in the story several times. Nope, she gets away with it because nobody's going to ask the question.
They never follow the company code of conduct. In fact, it follows them. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome and good morning. Thank you for being here. You know, as you look at this, because, you know, we're getting the same responses over and over again, maybe with just a little bit of different nuances, that, well, the president can do it because he can call a national emergency and he can just take money from the military and move it over there.
Mm-hmm.
No, he can't. If Congress has designated military money for a certain, you know, the over here for A, the president is not allowed to switch that to B unless Congress has authorized that those funds can be used in a different way. But there's twofold uphill problems for the president if he declares a national emergency. It's that the National Emergency Act, when you look at that of 1976, was about moving, that's about moving assets where they are needed in a certain time. It isn't about, national emergency is not about permanently confiscating property through eminent domain. That's the problem that the president has. That's the uphill battle. If he wish to build a wall and not just a new wall that goes through private property, and that's the problem that he would have right there. Number one, the allocation of the funds, where do you get them from to begin with? And number two, in the places where the 240 something miles of new fencing that he would want under the $5.7 billion go through private property. Now, the fact is, you can state it. It can be in the courts for years, because number one, even if Congress said we wish to do it, you would have people stating, you would have people saying, wait a minute, you want my property? Okay, that's not enough money for it. Then it goes to court.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes eminent domain in the courts can go on for 10 years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, easy. And we're not even talking about, just imagine that they were to get all the property they wanted, then the construction of the wall. Because when you're talking about national security and some kind of national emergency, you're talking about an immediate threat.
Hurricane.
Yes. Mexico's army
at
the border.
Biological weapon.
Right.
We believe there's a bomb over here.
Right.
Assets move in.
The president could deploy troops and everything else. So the court would say, well, wait a minute. You see a clear and present danger there, yet these are the things you haven't done. Now, we did have some troops on the border. But the point being is, if you see that, then, and you believe it's still a danger because you're now declaring it a national emergency, then where's the demonstration that you have done those other things up until now, where you've put assets on the border?
And that's the challenge, the legal challenge the president has, mm-hmm, in this.
Mm-hmm.
Again, and we stated over and over again, and we still get the same responses if people aren't hearing it, is the fact that the national emergency is something that the president immediately can respond to, because you don't have time to go to Congress.
Right.
So you can get those assets moved to where they need to be. You could, and those assets might necessitate that you have government assets on private property,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
where you can use it. It doesn't mean that you can permanently take their property away from them. And that's where they view the 1953 Supreme Court decision, where Truman wished to, take over the steel,
nationalized steel, yeah,
companies because of the strike and, mm-hmm, and because they needed the steel for the Korean War.
Mm-hmm.
And the Supreme Court said, no, you can't do that because Congress doesn't authorize that to happen. Now, if Congress would have authorized that to happen and called it, you know, this is a wartime thing, then yes, the president could have done it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. You have to be, Congress has to be specific. Once you get into something that is outside the immediacy of that national emergency, which means a clear and present pretty massive danger to a particular area, not something that has been going on for decades upon decades upon decades. This is how the court would look at it.
Right.
Many courts would look at it, and maybe not all courts, but we're talking about the uphill battle that the president has, and that would be the thing. Well, you can't permanently take property away from somebody. You just can't nationalize their property because you, as president, called it a national emergency. Congress could. You can't.
Yep.
And that's the challenge that the president has. Let us go back to you. We go to, let me see, Rick in Pennsylvania. Rick, hi. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you doing this evening?
Very good.
I'm a new listener. I drive truck at night, so I listen to you quite often at night. I like you guys' topics. I'm not saying what should be done. I'm asking a question here.
Okay.
You're saying that if this went to court, the judge would want to know, well, what's changed it to where now it's a national emergency? Isn't the latest caravan that's coming up here and trying to get in and causing violence and throwing rocks and tear gas is being done? Two children just died down there. Isn't that considered like a national emergency?
No.
No, it isn't.
If Mexico sent their army, if Al-Qaeda showed up in droves and they were at the border and they were coming in and there were a very clear and, again, present danger, an imminent threat, that isn't an imminent threat beyond a violent protest. It's not a danger to most Americans. It's not to say that the president, imagine the caravan were 100,000 at that border, and it wasn't, but just imagine for the sake of the argument. The president could deploy troops. He could deploy troops down to the border, and he did deploy troops temporarily, and he could keep them there until there was no longer that threat. But the one thing he can't do is confiscate that property under eminent domain, or he won't. Not confiscation, but they would take that property, buy that property for fair market value under eminent domain from those private owners. And he couldn't do that without Congress. He could deploy troops. And he did.
We have a national opioid crisis. Mm-hmm. Could the president take private property of eminent domain because of the war on drugs? Somebody brought that up earlier.
Right.
I think it was Judge Napolitano on Fox News, and I agree with him sometimes. I disagree with him on other times, but I think he did make a great point. The left always talks about the fact that we have a national emergency on health care.
Mm-hmm.
People are dying. This is what they claim. People are dying because the proper health care isn't available. People's houses are bankrupt. We have a national emergency. The president declares a national health care plan because it's a national emergency. Therefore, you have to pay taxes. Your property is taken, which is your money that you have to pay in taxes. And the president can authorize this, and Congress must follow him on it. Doesn't work that way.
Nationalize all the hospitals, nationalize all the pharmaceutical companies and pharmacies.
Right.
Because people are dying because they can't afford it. I mean, there are a number of things that you could go to where there are dangers and threats and scenarios where Americans are dying. Does it mean that the executive branch can just move in and do something about it? Not necessarily. They can't do it without Congress. The president said it himself last week. He was asked about DACA in the courts. And he said, you know, we believe we're going to win in the courts. And this was during the last Wednesday during the cabinet meeting. He said, no, we believe we'll win in the courts because we don't believe that the former administration, the Obama administration, had the right or the authority to enact DACA without Congress. But if you believe that, then we have the right to essentially repeal it. Now, what's interesting is that we'll see if the courts see it that way. But he's right that the judges were saying, and we said this all along about DACA, if a federal judge believes that the former administration could implement DACA, then you must believe that the next administration can repeal it as policy. And Trump, the president, his whole point on that is leave that to Congress. And then he said something to the effect, can you imagine if I had all that power myself?
Right.
That would be scary, right? Because we're talking about a number of things to make this wall happen. We understand why people want it. But there's a process here in the U.S. that has to be followed. And that it also has to be respected.
Well, and again, you know, we had talked about Ann Coulter's response to all of this so far and what's been going on. And you and I are wondering whether those very pro-wall and pro-Trump people believe this isn't a strategy but an off-ramp.
And in part, that's my theory, yes. Because politically, what do? You give up and say, well, I tried, and go home? Or do you say, no, we'll keep fighting and we'll send this Hail Mary to the courts, pretty much expecting you're not going to win? But if it takes 10 years to get that decision, at least you get through next year's election cycle, which has already begun. And you take this whole thing on the wall off the table, knowing you're not going to get the funding for it between now and at least January of 2021. So your only political off-ramp is to make an executive move knowing that you're not going to win. That maybe there's a 10% chance you could win. And that's going to have to be with a Justice Department that can show, demonstrate, frankly, that the president, that any president, forget about this being President Trump, but any president has the authority to do this and enact eminent domain in a situation like that. Because if he is able to do that, any president is able to do that. We'll go back a few years with Obama and some of the federal takeover of private property. And they were saying, well, wait a minute. And there was a court challenge and the private property owners won. People were screaming about this. Just imagine that it were President Obama.
Well, why do you think
you were a rancher in Texas or anywhere else where there's private property? That rancher may, you know, we got a call earlier, who just made a comment. It wasn't on the air, but they made a comment that, the ranchers would agree. Well, you don't know that. If they offered $10 an acre, I mean, it's supposed to be fair market value, but that's a negotiation. In every eminent domain case, you're going to have a court challenge because the owner is going to want to get as much money for their property as possible. This isn't about a wish list or a rally. Everybody can agree that there should be a wall and that it's ridiculous that the Democrats aren't offering him the funding, because really it's not about the money. It's about the hatred for this president. We all
right.
know that.
Right.
So, but beyond that, his hands are tied and they always have been. Because there's no political will to get it done from the left. They didn't have the political will to get it done on the right for whatever reason. And here we are.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. We got people coming up with all sorts of just wild and crazy ideas. Just one here. The Kelo decision solved the issue of eminent domain for the border wall. No, it did not.
No.
Not at all.
No, it didn't.
What it is saying is if you're going through eminent domain, that the elected representatives that have created a law for eminent domain for a specific purpose, then they can do that. That doesn't apply to the federal government when Congress has the authority to do it, not the president. So I know everybody's trying to find this way through,
mm-hmm.
but it's still going to be there on the federal level.
Well, and that's really going to be the entire situation is not going to change. I guess the one consideration that we have not talked about this morning is, could the president say, well, instead of building a wall, I'm going to build a human wall. I'm going to deploy troops because I do believe this is a national crisis. And while I don't have the power to and the money to build the wall, we will make sure that the troops are there to enforce the border.
Probably not on private property.
I don't know that you can make the case because it wouldn't be. Well, you can't say until further notice. Or can you, I guess, is the question. Because you can deploy them. You can deploy assets. But it has to be temporary. And the question is, what would the executive order actually say?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning. In the news, well, the big news is the president's going to address the country tonight. Prime time on the wall. Budget negotiations. And I guess we'll find out whether the president was going to attempt to call a national emergency.
Mm-hmm.
Just want to clarify, we had somebody contact us and state, well, with the Kelo decision, that was the Supreme Court decision going back, what, about 15 years ago?
Right.
Where the Supreme Court came out and said you can take eminent domain for commercial purposes.
Yeah.
And the caller, or the person writing us was stating that they believe that is the in that the president can use. Well, mm-hmm. actually, it's not.
No, it's not.
Because that changed the reason. It didn't change the process.
Right. And that's what is still in play here is the process, which requires Congress and the executive branch.
Right. Now, unless you were mistaken and thought he was saying he was going to build a mall.
Right. Which he
and
could
not
do.
A wall. Then the Kelo decision might come into effect.
Right.
I don't think he would build a mall, though, because right now, probably that isn't in real estate the thing to do.
Yeah, and he still needs Congress to do it. And Chuck does not like walls.
Yes.
Or malls.
Malls. Walls or malls. So the Kelo decision would not apply because that doesn't change the process,
right.
And that was more for local governments. It wouldn't change the process of the federal government.
It only changes the reason, which, by the way, we disagree with.
I disagree
with that decision.
Absolutely disagree with the Kelo decision.
Yes.
Yep. That why? Constitution clearly does not talk about commercial development.
Right.
And so we've always disagreed. I remember doing shows when I was doing my local show when that came out. That's how I know it was over 15 years ago, because I believe it was my local show I was doing, where we disagreed with that at that time. So the Kelo decision would not make a difference. And we've talked about the challenges and the uphill climb that the president has on this and why he would be going in this direction. Is he just looking for an off-ramp? We know people like Ann Coulter furious with everything that he's doing this week. And, you know, you get the sense from her that she suspects that's what this is. That you simply say, okay, I'm going to do it. The courts come in. You don't need to fast track it. You say, look, nothing I can do until the courts rule on it. And then you hopefully can use it in 2020 for re-election again.
Mm-hmm.
We had one person who wrote us and said he believes the president will resign tonight.
No.
We're betting people on this one. I would say that is not going to happen.
I'm just going to guess that that's a no. That's an uneducated guess. No, I think it is taking it essentially. You're taking it away from Congress too, right? Because they have something to point at the president at and say he's the bad guy because he wants a wall. you get this off the table altogether, but you also get it off the table for you. If you're the president, this goes into the court. You don't, if you're, you know, you're the Justice Department, you don't try and fast track this up the chain all the way up to the Supreme Court. You're hoping that this battle will go on for years because you're going to keep saying politically, well, it's still in the courts and we believe we'll win. You don't want a SCOTUS decision on this June. That would be bad. Because it's likely that SCOTUS would come back and say the president does not have the authority because of eminent domain and because he can't fund it.
And I know some people may not want to hear it, but the reason that I think many people like, and she was one of the first pro-Trump people, and she's just, you know, livid at what he's doing this week, is because I believe that you have the pro-wall people who look at what happened back before Christmas, and they realized, because remember how many times the president has said, you know, and at the beginning of this year with the budget deal, or last year, where he said, nope, but September comes along, and we're not going to let this thing go. I gave them one. I'm not going to give them again. And then and we said, no, he's not going to do it in September. Then he let it go in September. And then when you got to December, and the pro-wall people saw that the president, when Sarah Huckabee Sanders, on that morning, when you and I don't think we've ever probably talked about the show that early in the morning.
Right.
And I was on my way somewhere, and you and I were on the phone 9:10 in the morning about it when Sarah Huckabee Sanders came out and said, we can find the money elsewhere. And everybody said the president just caved. And that's the problem right now. The Republicans believe that the president doesn't even believe in this anymore.
Right.
Because that's why he caved. The reason that you had the many in the conservative media go nuts about it when they did that is not only because they thought the president caved because he wasn't trying to get Congress to approve it, but they knew he wasn't going to find the money and be able to authorize the money from any other agencies to do it. So they believed at that point the president had said, I am giving up this fight. It's over. And I think, and justifiably so, many of the pro-Trump, pro-wall people were furious because they said, you know, you never really tried. You just talked about it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so now I do think that many of them believe that the president is looking, and you used the term in our pre-show meeting, looking for an off-ramp.
Right. And this gives it to him because he doesn't have to just look at Nancy and Chuck and say, sorry, okay, fine, you guys win. And then look at his constituency and say, sorry, guys, I tried, when none of them believe that. We asked the question before the Christmas break. All right. What's next? What is the what's the reset button, or what does the president do? Because he's the only one. The Democrats are not going to give up anything. They're not going to give up the 5.7. And they're going to point to him until the government reopens. Well, you can't close the government for 2 years, so now what? They're not going to give up a dime. So now what? This is your only off-ramp. This is it. Send it to the courts and let it steep. Be done. That's the political move. You send it there, and you tell the people that you believe you're going to win, and I guess there's an outside chance you would, but I don't think that's going to happen because it doesn't get around the eminent domain. Doesn't. Because if you just ask the simple questions, if you believe the one person has that power in the executive branch, well, look at how many things could be declared a national emergency. You brought up earlier healthcare. But how many different things, the opioid crisis, all the different things that, because people are dying, people die all the time. National crisis. National emergency. So if you believe the president has that kind of power, and can act without Congress, then you believe any president would and can have that power. So on the eminent domain itself, forget about even the funding, because there's the other part. Where are you going to find the funding? Let's say you found $5.7 billion, which they won't, but let's say they did.
72,000 people died of drug overdoses in the United States in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a national crisis and a national emergency?
Right.
Tell me where 72,000 people have died elsewhere.
Right.
That's more than automobile accidents.
Mm-hmm. Twice.
The majority.
Automobile, more than twice.
50,000 caused by opioids.
Right.
So is that a crisis?
Right. Well, imagine this. National emergency. Whatever the number is. Of people dying every year as a result of, wait for it, guns. National emergency. I'm the president, says Michelle Obama, who wins in 2020. Where do you want to draw that line? Because it's the person you supported?
It's a national emergency. Your property rights to your guns doesn't matter anymore.
That's right.
Because people are dying.
Right. Because if we can confiscate, if the president could confiscate property, even though it's not real confiscation because the government does, under eminent domain, have to reimburse market value. But, okay, market value for the gun. Here, we can do our own buyback program. There's no mechanism for that. But the point being is that there is no mechanism for anything we've discussed this morning, regardless of how badly you want that wall. There isn't. It does not exist. They're going to try and make the case. And it will go to court, and it's going to be an interesting legal battle. But at the end of it, it still doesn't go anywhere. Because they can appeal and appeal and appeal, but ultimately you get to the Supreme Court. And that's what all of this is about. Because if this is based on national emergency, then you would have to build your case for that. The president has to build his case for that. How does he do that? You can say it is a national emergency, way too many people coming over here, and it's a burden on our system and everything else. Well, he waited 2 years to enact a national emergency that he's been aware of since at least 2016, because that's what he ran on, but never enacted any of this then. So the first judge is going to say this is arbitrary because he couldn't win with Congress.
And the fact is the National Emergency Act, again, those things are based on a clear and present and immediate danger and being able to move federal assets. And that's
why
Truman lost when he tried to take over the steel companies with after the strikes, that they said, sorry, can't do it, but we need the steel for the Korean War. Doesn't matter. Congress would have to authorize that.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of eminent domain, or because of national emergency, Congress would have to do it. The president is about immediate reaction to an immediate threat.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the president comes in. So, you know, those national emergencies. And you know where most of the national emergencies have been used?
Mm-hmm.
At least up until 2007, when they've been called by a president. Either trade restrictions with an enemy that you're fighting in war, or confiscating Iranian after the Iranian hostage crisis, the money that eventually the assets they gave back to them in the Iran deal, confiscating that's the authority the president has used the most in the emergency is either trade restrictions on somebody we're at war with, or fighting with, or not friendly with anymore, or confiscating assets because of their assets that they have in this country. That's what it's been used for the most, the National Emergency Act.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll, of course, tonight from the Oval Office, it's an 8-minute plan for 8 minutes, scheduled 8-minute address. We'll kind of take that. We'll be able to play a lot of it, if not all of it, on the program. And we'll, you know, again, get into it because we don't know. It also could be about the redeployment of troops to the border. It could be something as simple as that. But his constituents want it to be a border, or his core, his base.
A wall.
Right. A wall on the border. And not troops on the border. Because you're not going to be able to keep them there forever. So, again, is this the off-ramp? I suspect that it is.
866-90-RED-EYE.
USDA is looking into the issue of how to define a product that supporters call meat, even though it's been cultured in a laboratory.
I think that there's a lot to still be learned about these products because they are not yet in the marketplace, and USDA and FDA have been spending a considerable amount of time really evaluating what this product is and in what ways consumers might consume it.
USDA's Acting Deputy Undersecretary for Food Safety, Carmen Rottenberg, says meetings have been held with scientists and the public.
FDA held a science board meeting earlier this year in October, and then we held a joint public meeting with FDA on risks, hazards, and labeling, that all are considerations that the U.S. government has to make.
The public comment period closes December 26th.
I think there is a question about whether these products are safe and how the U.S. government will ensure the safety of the products, and those are still outstanding questions.
This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The USDA report is sponsored by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel and Shell Rotella.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Curley. I'm Gary McNamara. We'll get to some calls following the bottom of the hour. I just want to talk about a bright spot here. You know, we've talked about the new NAFTA with Mexico and Canada,
right?
And talked about the fact that basically it's 98% of what the old NAFTA was. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's 97%, but what we're saying is the vast majority is the exact same. There aren't major changes. Once and they will eventually be removed, the tariffs on steel and aluminum, the deal really isn't going to affect much. You know, when we go back to what the president was talking about during the campaign about, balancing, changing the trade imbalance and all that, that's been forgotten. That isn't going to happen in any of these trade deals. It looks like the trade will be open up more. The same thing with China. U.S. and China reopened talks Monday. And I'll tell you this, from what I see so far of a very, at least early on, a very protectionist trade team that he had, it really looks like they're trying to get China to open up, their markets without, without closing ours down or attempting to restrict or tariff them. It looks like that they're really trying to get more open trade. Now, one of the problems is, reading the Wall Street Journal, the suspicion of the Chinese that, okay, you're going to try to get us to open up ours, and then you're going to close yours down. You're going to change the deal after we make it.
Right.
And so both sides are trying to get assurances. That would be a positive. It's one of the things that I have criticized, we've criticized the president on early on about where he's wanted to go with trade. But it looks like in China, and it looks like eventually what we're going to end up with, whatever the new NAFTA, that things are a lot better and progressing, especially on the Chinese front, because already the base was there with Mexico and Canada already.
Sure.
It was
right.
Already there.
Right.
But if he can make these inroads with China, it would be huge for trade with both countries.
Yeah,
no doubt. Would be.
866-90-RED-EYE, here is your forecast.
Boston, Massachusetts will pick up a couple inches of snow in these overnight hours. It'll be short-lived. Temperatures warm into the 40s by midday, and then rain for Wednesday's forecast. there is a rain-snow line right along I-90 in central New York. So north of 90 from Boston into Maine, snow showers. Then a transition of some perhaps mixed precip right in around I-90 down through New York City. And then it's all rain as we move from New York into Pennsylvania, the Tennessee Valley, and into the southern Texas border. Another area of concern in the overnight hours, just to the west of Chicago, I-94 and I-90 near Madison will pick up some light snow and mixed precip. That'll extend over the Great Lakes, north of I-94 into Detroit this morning. Rain for Northern California and the West Coast, snow in the Northern Rockies. There's your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Never follow the company code of conduct. In fact, it follows them. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome and good morning. Still getting response that you don't need eminent domain because the government owns the border. That is incorrect.
That is false.
There is private property that the wall would be built on. That's documented. We know it already.
Mm-hmm.
The vast majority, if you wish to build a wall across Texas, would be private property. You would have to build that wall on. We still have people calling up. We've explained that, I don't know how many hundreds of times over the last year when we've talked about it, and so far we've probably explained it five or six times tonight.
Well, nobody in the administration is trying to make the point that it's federal property.
Right. The administration is not making that point either. Yep. So. They know it has to be done. It's there is some federal lands, there's state lands, and mm-hmm. there's a ton of private property.
Right.
So that's just the reality of it. If you wish to keep saying it isn't, that's fine. But it is. That's
mm-hmm.
You may wish it isn't, but it is.
Right.
So in other news, just got to get this one in. Activists who hope to make Denver the first U.S. city to decriminalize psychedelic mushrooms. Psilocybin Initiative is what they're calling it.
Okay.
It's from the Denver Post.
All right.
They move closer to that step by turning in ballot petitions. The initiative, if approved by voters in May, would apply to the use and possession of psilocybin mushrooms, also called magic mushrooms.
Mm-hmm. By the way, there's no magic to them at all.
By adults 21 and older.
Yeah. So decriminalize the possession of it.
Mm-hmm. At that point, when that's legalized, I am going to form the tripping party.
Right. Well, do they have their,
man, I see things in a whole different way than you people do.
Normal had the high mm-hmm. times. Do they have their own version of a magazine? Is there some kind of legalization movement that's been growing for years? Shrooms? Really? Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
Pots and shrooms and I still can't get a bottle of vodka in my town.
Yeah, me either. So I don't think that's going to happen. I'm going to guess no.
We're still smuggling in vodka.
Right.
No, you can buy it elsewhere and bring it in. You can possess it. You can't get it delivered
in your town.
Yeah, we don't get busted.
Right.
You don't get busted for having a bottle of vodka. Even though when I was driving down the road and the officer said, "You're busted," I said, "I can legally have a bottle of vodka." And he said, "Not open.
Not in your hand while driving and you're chugging it like a Gatorade." Hello.
I wanted to get that story in. Something mm-hmm. something outside of the politics. Something to make you smile.
Well, here's my question. When do these people, this group here, how do they get together to, first of all, how do they get it together long enough to get out of their mother's basement?
I don't know.
I don't know what the penalty for it is. Possession of wild or what? Magic mushrooms.
I know it's illegal, you know, federally. It's got to be worse than pot, right?
But the idea first is decriminalize it in terms of the possession amount, and then what? Go on to recreational use and legalization there? I just don't know how people who are tripping organize. That's my question. Remember what the Governor Moonbeam said when they legalized it?
Yes.
Look, not everybody can smoke pot here in California.
Somebody's got to be productive.
We need people to actually go to work and have jobs. People are going to have to be productive. So, yeah. No. Not going to happen with the mushrooms. No. Not going to happen.
By the way, I really wasn't driving down the road with an open bottle of vodka.
No, it was rum.
Got to watch you say on the air these days. It's like people, I heard him say it. He said it.
Yeah. Can I see your license? All right, hold my beer.
It was in a flask.
That's right. It wasn't in a bottle at all. That would be wrong. That, see, is not a good example for the kids. The flask is, though, because they don't know what a flask is yet. They don't learn that. They don't learn that until like third grade.
Well, you know, it bothers me a little bit. In the last 10 years, mm-hmm. Well, wait a minute. You gave me one.
What?
Didn't you give me a flask?
No.
Okay, somebody, I've got two presents.
No, I remember the time that I said on the air.
I got two presents as mm-hmm. a flask.
No, I think it was Brian.
Oh, Brian gave me?
Because remember, okay. I asked on the air, I said, do people still have flasks? Do they still make flasks?
So Brian got us, he got us flasks. Okay.
Well, and then I had a couple of listeners send me flasks.
Okay, because yeah. I was looking at my house. I have two. I've never used a flask in my life.
No.
And I got two. I'm like, oh.
Well.
So can someday I'll put, and what do you put in them?
Whatever you want to drink.
That's how out of it I am. So you can put, like, whiskey or...
That's the thing. They're way too small. I don't need a flask. I need a two-liter bottle. No, yeah.
Blackberry brandy.
The idea is that, see, back in the day, it would be... Back in the day, you would put whatever, your alcohol, and then it's flat, so you put it in your coat pocket. Or, on the TV show Mad Men, you just drink it straight out of the bottle in the office at 7 a.m. every day. Seriously. Yeah.
As we still ask that question, talking about assistant district attorneys and district attorneys and all these lawyers that have bottles because of law and order.
Yeah.
Wonder if they ever talked about that in any legal group ever got together and said, look, that's giving us a bad name that we all have bottles.
Right. In our desks.
The district attorneys, whatever that national group would be. You know, we need to approach Washington and say, look, let's not have this portrayed that we're all drinking after we win or lose a case.
Right. Remember the judge in the movie Primal Fear?
Yes.
And they go back to her chambers and she pours one for each of them, and then Richard Gere says no, so she pours that one into hers and has a double. I'm like, what? What just happened here? I'm pretty sure that's not legal.
And Lou Grant?
Yeah.
And Mary Tyler Moore, he had a bottle. They all had, remember that the media people, they all had bottles. And I've been in this business now for 36 years, talk in 30.
Mm-hmm.
I've never had a bottle. Well, I don't have a desk now, but when I used to have a desk...
Yeah,
I didn't have a bottle in that desk. Nobody I knew, at least nobody, maybe they had flasks, but nobody I knew had bottles in their desks.
No, I've never actually experienced that.
You know. No. All right, it's been an interesting day. We had a lot of stories today. Let's break out and start doing the hard stuff.
Right.
Let's start drinking.
I've never experienced that, and I've covered a lot of different things in radio. Maybe in TV they do that. They do that in TV?
I don't know. Probably. Break you out? Know those TV people.
We don't, I mean,
you know them.
Now, a couple of times after it, they went out. You know, they went out, you know.
Yeah.
They went out to a place over to Barney's,
right.
Whatever. That happened a few times, mm-hmm. but it didn't happen inside the studio. All right, let's start pouring out the liquor.
Right.
Now in Denver. All right, let's smoke one, and who's got the shrooms? We've covered the big story.
That's right. Sit around smoking and tripping. Why are we here, man?
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. In radio, we were just looking in desk. If we had a desk, I was just looking for food. Or my coffee cup.
Speaking of the legal profession, mm-hmm. Look, we wish her all the best because we don't wish anybody bad. But Judge Ginsburg missing Supreme Court arguments for the first time, and it does bring up the part about her health. Now she still is going to judge cases. She's going to get the briefs and do mm-hmm. everything. Mm-hmm. John Roberts made that clear yesterday.
She can still write opinions.
She will still be writing opinions. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, and I've seen a couple of publications. Write up and they say, look, what she has is probably very, 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 very serious. Mm-hmm. You know, the cancer and all that. And she may not be on the Supreme Court for a long time.
Right.
Which brings up a bunch of different scenarios. You and I were talking off the air and we want to be sensitive to it because we don't, you know, again, you're not, it's not like there's a death watch going on and that's not where we're coming from, but it is the political reality that she has never, you know, missed before, or this was the first time, I think, in 25 years. And she does have some serious, serious health problems, mm-hmm. which, again, mean that there are people in Washington, D.C., especially in the administration, saying, okay, is it time to break out the list again?
Well, and that's where, you know, it goes from, you know, that basically to the exactly what we could revisit again with Kavanaugh, but I doubt we'll see it play out exactly the same. There will be plenty of noise surrounding it the next time it happens, whether it's, you know, this year or next or down the road. It's always a circus to some extent. Will it be the Kavanaugh thing? Doubtful, because you were making the point off the air that if the president's going to move, it's likely going to be a female nominee. At the next nominee, there's a decent chance it would be a female nominee. Especially if you're replacing a female on the bench, that would be something that would at least be, at that level, considered to be respectful. Whether or not the other parts of it won't be respect, because the respect for the process itself was thrown out the window by members of the committee, Senate Judiciary Committee, during the Kavanaugh thing. We saw that play out. We know how that will go.
What I wonder now, though, you see the one judicial nominee that Kamala Harris and Hirono of Hawaii mm-hmm. are campaigning against because Catholic and belongs to the Knights of Columbus.
Right.
That now I think again. You played that one card once, sexual harassment or rape or whatever.
Now it will be, do you go to church?
The next card will be, and that's what I'm wondering. This is where they're headed. Mm-hmm. Let's get the public used to this. Catholics cannot be a Supreme Court justice.
Right.
That's where they're headed. Mm-hmm. That nobody in the federal court. Because I believe what you see here, they're throwing out the trial balloons.
Oh, sure.
Let's get our radical senators here. Let's get the radical senators. They'll be the first one. They put up the trial balloon. Nope. Being in the Knights of Columbus, which represents a Catholic church, is unacceptable. Anybody who's a Catholic cannot be a federal judge. That's where they're going.
Sure.
That's where they are.
Yep.
Not just where they're going. That's where they are now.
Yep. It'll definitely be a protest. No doubt.
866-90-RED-EYE.
What's the difference between standard number 2 diesel and premium fuel? Ron Jessen is director of product management for Cenex, the makers of Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Diesel Fuel, and he fills us in.
You may want to consider the total operational cost behind the price of the pump. If you look at the cost for replacement and you look at the cost of ongoing maintenance, unfortunately, those costs haven't gone down. They've actually continued to increase. But switching to a premium diesel fuel can really result in some large operational savings with the fuel economy and reducing the equipment repair costs. Our fleet owners, if you want to consider trying a premium diesel fuel in the past, or if you have considered it in the past, now is really the time to take advantage of that with the lower diesel fuel prices to try out that premium diesel fuel.
There are more than 1,450 Cenex locations in 19 states across the Midwest and Pacific Northwest. Visit Cenex.com to find a Cenex location and learn more. This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara. And we were just talking during our mid-show meeting and on the air also that it's only going to be an eight-minute speech. So in an eight-minute speech, you're most likely not in 8 minutes going to write a speech which is going to try to convert the unconverted. What you're going to do is lay out what you plan on doing. So I think you're absolutely right that you could see tonight, and most likely you will see the president say he is going to do specific things, whether that means he will call a national emergency, whether it means he might send troops down to the border. Those are all, I think, distinct possibilities. Whether he might say, look, I am going to sign, we're going to open the government, and since I can't get cooperation from Congress, we are going to declare a national emergency and build a wall.
Right.
And then just state that and move on and not give any specifics is a distinct possibility, because the other point is, where are you going to go?
Right. We will be playing the president in his own words on the Wednesday show, and we'll break it down.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.